A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey there, welcome to Comedy Album Book Club, the podcast in which we listen to an influential, loved, hated, or rarely heard comedy album, and then talk about it with comedians and comedy nerds. I'm your host, Jason DeLine, an actor and comedy enthusiast. In this episode, we discuss Dennis Miller's The Off-White album, his first of nine from 1988. We recommend listening to the album before listening to the rest of this episode. Dennis Michael Miller was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in 1953. Inspired by the film All the President's Men, he majored in journalism at Point Park University. But in 1979, he saw a Robin Williams HBO special that inspired him to become a comedian. He developed his style by talking about his fears at open mics. His style is laid back but critical of current events, often citing deep cut pop culture references, and he has a strong use of specific language, which he prides himself on. His influences include Jonathan Miller, Richard Pryor, Richard Belzer, and Jay Leno. We'll talk more about what we comedians we think he's also like. He's been a political commentator, sports commentator, and actor. He was a cast member of Saturday Night Live from 1985 to 1981. He hosted the Weekend Update as the news anchor, and then he hosted his own talk shows on HBO, CNBC, as well as a radio show. Miller's listed as 21st on Comedy Central's 100 Greatest Stand-Up Comedians of All Time and was ranked as the best host of Saturday Night Live's Weekend Update by Vulture. He's done 13 comedy specials, been in 11 films, two of which are okay, and he's 65 years old. On today's episode, I'm joined by our producer and resident comedy nerd, Matthew Ardill.
Hello.
Hi, Matt. As well as our guests, comedian Todd Van Allen.
Hello, how are you?
There's Todd. Fine. If you're asking the audience, they can't answer, so yeah, I assume you're asking me.
Send it on a postcard.
And comedian Chili Davidson.
How you doing, babe. Chili? Yeah, babe.
Good to see you guys.
That's my little Dennis Miller. Yeah. Here we go.
Sure.
So, I made a note. I tried to write down all the little nicknames or names he said. It wasn't as long a list as I thought.
It's tough to tell the difference in an actual person and just the name he's made up.
Sometimes, right. Yeah. It started with Twyla.
Uh-huh.
And then we had a Mumminshants, Habib,
right.
Aunt B, Cha-Cha,
right.
Gus, and Haji.
Uh-huh.
Some of those are racial.
Some of those are quite problematic.
Some of those are a little, some of those are not today.
Right.
Mumminshants is actually a dance troupe.
They do mime
and dance.
That's right.
What were some of the other ones on that one?
We had
Aunt B, I think, was the aunt from
Mayberry, right?
Mayberry.
Yeah, the Andy Griffith Show.
Or like any old aunt.
I had
an Aunt B.
Everyone
had
Sam an aunt Drucker B. is the shopkeep from Green Acres.
Right.
I actually made a list of weird obscure
references.
I watched that show, but
I couldn't. I can't tell you the
I wouldn't remember that. I remember Mr. Haney. How do you, Mr. Haney? He had that crazy something like that. Yeah. And then there was a guy named Arnold Ziffel. I think that was the name.
Arnie Ziffel.
Yeah.
Was that the name of the pig?
Good Lord.
No.
Or did Arnold Ziffel have a pig?
The pig was named maybe it was Arnold.
Maybe it was.
Yeah. I think a pig was Arnold. It's been a long time.
There's some great characters in that show.
Right.
And
I've never
Eva
felt my age more than like I'm a pretty old soul. I get a lot of references. I know so much about the 70s and 80s and stuff like that, but good Lord, like every third word is like, I mean, they call Ron James the Canadian Dennis Miller because both of them are just like, how many references can I throw out at once? And if you get the references, it doesn't even matter if you find them funny or not.
Right.
You just love it.
You're like, I think he gets less accessible as he goes. This is Miller's first album, and I got most of the stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Some of it's very specific, a very small moment of time in like 87 or something. But before we get too deep into it.
Sure, back up.
I want to ask you, Todd.
Yes.
Why you chose this album?
This was an album. First of all, I always loved Dennis Miller. He was, I know we're going to disagree on this, but when I go back on it, yes, Norm Macdonald was a really good host of the Weekend Update.
Mm-hmm.
But his stuff I always just found very smart, clever, well written. It was like, whenever I listened to it back in the 80s, I was like, that's the guy I want to be. Because there's just so many great specific references. Like, there's nothing I think that adds to a joke more than specificity. Like, if you say, I'm in a coffee shop the other day, and the audience is now racing through the head going, oh, a coffee shop. So they all have their own thing.
Sure.
If you say a Tim Hortons, then it's become more specific.
Right.
But there are different Tim Hortons. But if you say, I was at the Tim Hortons at Queen and Bathurst, everyone knows exactly what you mean by Queen and Bathurst Tim Hortons.
Sure, like, it's the worst Tim Hortons.
It's not
up
there.
It doesn't have a roof.
Yes.
It's a terrible...
They really just throw beans in your face.
I'm glad they finally got rid of that coffee time. There was a coffee time, was it Parliament? Just south of Richmond.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And the donuts always had bees on them.
Yeah.
Like, it was just, you just couldn't go in there. It was just the worst.
But this is, but that that sort
sprinkles.
Of, that richness of his, of his specific choices and his just rattling that. And I remember reading an article about how he kind of goes through his process and you heard examples of that today. Like, as he got more and more into his career, this was sort of like the, I'm going to put this out so people know what I'm about.
Right.
In the jokes that followed this album, they became more and more, you sort of see the process it was going through, which was the first joke lands and it's for everyone. The next tag is for about 70% of the room.
Right.
And then the next tag is for like 30% of the room. And then that last one is for two guys at the back laughing their asses off because they understand the Magna Carta so well. And like that's how he would structure his joke.
Interesting.
And
I feel like the whole set is like that too. Like it started off very accessible and slow paced, and then just gets really fast, ranty and referencey. Yeah.
And then he became famous for the rants.
Sure,
which I believe started on Saturday Night Live. I was like, I don't want to get off on a rant here.
I don't think so. I think it started on Dennis Miller Live.
There would be like a moment. Correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. Where he would just go in and go, there'd be a news story, he goes, I don't want to get off on a rant here. And it wasn't a long one, but he would just throw that line out.
Yeah. It was like the seed that it grew from.
Okay, yeah. So I apologize.
What I find interesting about those is, like, I don't know if you ever got the books of the rants.
No.
They were transcribed. And when I say transcribed, you'd be reading it along, and he's like, all I'm saying here is, thank you. All I'm saying here is, like, there is no proofreading on this.
Oh, wow. So even the applause breaks,
it is just like some guy getting $5 an hour, type what you hear.
I'll take it.
That's a book.
I think that's kind of cool, actually.
By the way, see that often. Just like, we do disagree on a bit of it, but you're very, like, I feel like you're amongst the population of the group of people wanting to do comedy in the 80s. Like, he was cool, he was hip, he was smart, and unlike a guy like Norm Macdonald, in terms of actually in the room, if you watch any of Dennis Miller's like Weekend Update stuff, he killed hardest in the room.
Yes.
And people loved Dennis Miller. Like, Norm was for a more specific group of people, and as was Colin Quinn and a lot of these people, whereas Dennis, like, killed there. He was one of the only people that survived the 86-87 season because he was one of the only consistents, and he is very smart, and he was very cool.
And the interesting thing too, like, I find about his career is, like, he was on Star Search, lost to Sinbad, and then
to imagine.
So he's just doing the complete touring opposites. Circuit, not doing political stuff at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lorne sees him, and he's like, oh, do you want to come to New York and work for me? And he's like, it kind of gives him a sideways job offer.
Yeah.
And his political comedy career is born.
That happens with a lot of the update guys. It's like Seth Meyers wasn't a political guy. He was an improv guy.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Right.
And then he, because he got, he was the only job he could do on Saturday Night Live. And then they become these politics guys because it's like they need, you're a great stand up and they need you to do something on the show.
And that's what made Chevy Chase such a great senator.
Absolutely. You
know, he clearly learned a lot from his tenure at the desk.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And now he's just a brilliant politician.
I think Jane Curtin would make a great congresswoman.
I always have to say that if Jane Curtin was doing it in the last 5 years, she'd be like a Samantha Bee type.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hell yeah.
Well, she was. Did you see her on the 40th anniversary? She came back. Yeah, and that was so pretty rad, man. Yeah, she's super nice, but yeah, really, really sharp.
Yeah, she's so smart.
Great counterbalance to Aykroyd in the early days. I felt she was so strong.
Really ahead of her time.
I think we're all missing Victoria Jackson's brilliance.
Sure, yeah.
I think.
Doing the splits on the news desk.
That's right.
Well, she and Dennis Miller had a great rapport. They did, actually.
And now that we see them, we go, of course you did.
It all makes sense. Yes.
Of course you did.
Exactly.
Now.
So hasn't she been like completely banned from YouTube for being so freaking crazy?
Well, she wasn't really invited to the 40th, but Dennis Miller was. He just couldn't make it.
Right. Apparently everyone was.
Yeah.
And there have been different accounts. Like if you ask Lorne, apparently Lorne's a pretty good guy and respects everyone who's ever been on the show, despite differences they might have later. But yeah, there's stories that Dennis wasn't invited.
Well, he came out and said,
right,
I had a vacation planned or whatever.
Right.
I mean, I love Lorne, but I just couldn't make it. Wow. Victoria was, I think she said she was invited, but wasn't allowed in the room. There was a whole thing. And she's like, I don't know.
I can valet parking.
She's the only thing I've heard. She did the Carson podcast. She was really good on that, but she feels so left out of so many things. And
what, the Carson podcast?
Yeah, it's another great podcast. It's a guy who interviews people who are famous for going on Carson or family members.
Oh, wow.
I thought you were confusing the Tonight Show with a podcast.
Everything's a podcast. That podcast? Kids.
It's like, oh,
it's
chilly.
The word for it now.
I know. It's just
the podcast that Johnny Carson.
I gotta go watch The Walking Dead. You know that podcast is so great. Yeah. It's on after the Mad Men podcast. Yeah.
I just don't know television anymore.
I've got a couple other tidbits here about him that I find interesting because people often ask what happened to Dennis Miller, because a lot of people champion him as this liberal comedian, this left wing comedian. Mm-hmm. And then after 2000, right. Yeah. And then after
listening to it now, it's a little,
sure. Oh,
right.
Yeah. No,
it's not right wing. It's more sense.
No. And he said he voted for Herbert Walker Bush in 1988, which he then later said that's proof he's conservative, and that he said that in 1992. But he's spoken over the years about kind of going left and right. He says that he follows whoever makes sense, but I think after 9/11 he's a little right of center, and you can hear the criticism here of, you know, saying something like the thing about Lebanon is the 11 million people ruined it for the rest or whatever. Yeah. Like that's a pretty nasty.
Yeah. Right. It wouldn't be as nasty then at the time.
I would hate to be his next shawarma. That is not going to fly.
There's a lot of theories out there. Yeah, well, why he went where he did.
I think he became very scared very quickly.
Right.
Yeah, and I think he clinged into the only sort of ideology. Like you can hear it in sort of even in this album, you can hear the patriotism that is in it.
Sure.
Like he makes fun of a lot of things, and you know, the people that the guy that he supports is supported by a bunch of the people he shits on in this album.
Yeah.
So now he is part of their team.
Right.
I would love to know how he reconciles that, but it would be nice to see him as like a guest speaker at a MAGA rally, and then someone just plays Alabama.
But he's not the type of Republican that I don't think was ever a Trump supporter. He's not a Tea Party guy. He's like a John Kasich, like Tim Allen type guy who likes to act like they are really smart.
Right.
And in reality, there's no depth to a lot of the things.
Right. No. And Miller says that himself, is he's not really that kind of a political guy.
Yeah.
He just wanted to make jokes. And coming from a journalism background, He liked language. He liked the specificity. And he just watched a lot of TV as a kid, so has all these arcane pop culture references. Yeah. But it sounds very clever. He's very well spoken. But he's sort of that asshole comedian, isn't he? Like, he's a lot like Leary or Hicks, but with more polish, more cool.
Yeah.
You can
see the pattern of the jokes, which is introduce what I'm about to talk about, initially shit on what I'm about to talk about, continue on with my thread, shit on that part.
Right.
Then tag.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you're right. It's like reference. Like, he is grabbing the shirt and just giving you chin music.
And like
entire time.
I read someone describe him as he wasn't particularly intelligent, but he had a deep well and a quick retrieval system.
Right.
He just has all these things he can pull from. And I'd love to know his process. That's something that comes up sometimes in this podcast is I wish we could be a fly on the wall and understand how they write, because it seems very off the cuff. I mean, this album is only two tracks.
Right.
And I just assume it's probably from two different nights and they just cut it in there to do that. But like, that's a long, you know, 40 minutes or 20 minutes. That's a long set. I mean, of course people do an hour and stuff like that. But I mean, there aren't a lot of real discernible segues. I mean, there definitely are. You can write down what all the bits are and stuff, but it's pretty seamless.
This is actually the audio track from a video special,
right?
Just him live in DC, I believe.
So what happens in the middle then?
I think you're right. I think it is just a splice, like between a couple of nights.
Right.
He's wearing the same suit.
Because you don't notice cut in the audio.
Well, it fades out.
And yeah, it fades out, but it doesn't feel like it's a juxtaposition of two completely different
Nights. I wonder if he has like a box of similes.
Yeah, right.
And then he just like, okay, I've got this, and he just starts flipping through this Rolodex of fun, and then finds the right one. Like the thing that has always impressed me with him is just as soon as he throws out the simile or the metaphor that he's going to anchor that joke in, you just go, of course. Mm-hmm. And I also found this with The Simpsons. There were jokes in that when I first heard it in 1988 that it was like watching The Simpsons, where The Simpsons would do something and it was entertaining, but it was referring to something that you maybe didn't know. So then when you finally see that thing, you go, oh my God.
Yes.
That's that.
Yes.
Right.
I've known people where I've quoted like The Godfather or something and they say, oh, Simpsons. And I'm like, no.
Indirectly.
But what's fantastic about that, The Simpsons, or in the early days, was that those reference, it didn't matter if you, I mean, it's icing on the cake if you get the reference, but if you don't, it's still funny. Their jokes were good enough on their own. You didn't even have to get it.
No.
But that's pretty awesome.
Exactly.
Wait, he's got some of that. I don't always think that's the case with Dennis.
Not always.
No. Some of them I'm just sitting there going, boy, I wish I got this.
Yeah.
This probably was hilarious.
I was watching the back of your head trying to figure out what you were getting and what you weren't.
Yeah.
As you were listening.
My
to
favorite
this.
Joke in the whole thing, I think, is the whole airplane joke, like crashing and being the only one who's not a like Christian or whatever.
Right, yeah.
I think that's just brilliant written. There's not a lot of references in there. It's tight. It's just a good joke, right? There's a few of those in there that it's like, oh, that's just a really good joke. And there's no need. He's not making any extra noises. He's not making any extra sounds. He's not making weird references. And he's got a couple in there. I mean, it does prove that he's just genuinely also really good at writing jokes, but he also does these things. I mean, it's like Chappelle has his fishbowl of punchlines.
Right.
He's got this Rolodex of similes, as Todd says, and it's like,
but he doesn't reuse them, which is amazing.
No, it's like, pretty incredible.
Like,
except for the Gabor sisters. He really leaned into them.
Yeah.
Well, they mentioned it once in this
three times he brought the Gabor system
three
up.
Times?
Yeah.
Did?
The only thing he brought up more than once. Oh, so like
I didn't catch three times.
Yeah.
Evangelical Gabor sister.
Yes.
Doesn't he drop a Zsa Zsa in there?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's Zsa Zsa.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And
there's another. I can't.
Oh,
I
think he mentions Green Acres.
He does mention Green Acres, which
he mentions the characters.
The characters, he does specifically call out the Gabor sisters three times, and I'm like, it's just the only time that being said, the only thing he reused, and every other thing is like one and done.
Right.
And I wonder if to amuse himself, when he tours or something, if some of the tags he comes up with on the spot.
Right.
Or if it's written that heavily and tightly. I don't know.
I got to say, the rooms that he's probably performing in front of now, he is really going to have to dumb down some of those references.
Yeah. I wrote something like B.F. Skinner, Kabuki Theater, Momonshas, like that 70s mask stuff. Truffaut's 400 Blows. Copernicus, William the Conqueror, Jeté, which is a dance move. Scarulo.
But then he also jokes about wearing two condoms square dances. Like, yeah, I was surprised. I expected a lot more of it to be political.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of just kind of everyday stand-up.
Politics. No. Like three quarters of the way through.
No, it's a lot of observation.
And then it's rattle, 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 rattle.
Yeah.
And he, but that I think is a testament to like him, like you say, like when this show is ramping up and he is getting more and more furious, not angry, but like furious in terms of the speed and the tone.
Right.
You can see these parts. But he also has these wonderful moments of pace. Because like it starts out very slow. Like I think it told him, I don't know, 2.5 minutes to tell his first joke.
Yeah.
Before you know, and that's a long way to go for fame. You know, especially that Coco. You know, I think he just likes that one for Coco.
But he's also hot off the introduction, right? Like for sure. Have a bit of time if you're a known commodity in the comedy world where you can just bask in the glow for a bit and everyone's already laughing just because you're standing there. Minutes. You know, you have a little time. Yeah.
But then like, you know, he would run in to like even when he's discussing like that when he gets into the sex chunk and you know, there was a very fast ramp up. I can't remember the materials before. There was a fast ramp up. And then he's like, now we have this thing. You can feel the room slow down.
Right.
And then, and then it speeds up again when the woman is playing, is this put Gland Chop back in the car.
Yeah.
Right. Gland Chop is probably my favorite that he makes. Did you get that one, Chili? Okay. So Lamb Chop was a puppet.
Oh, right.
And so Gland Chop is just the play on words of that.
And it's weird that he made it carport because it's kind of incongruous, the two things. Exactly. But sure, whatever.
Back in the
he gets away with that.
I do feel like it's kind of show offy.
It is.
Yes.
Yes.
Like, what is the word he used? I use, like, now I'm pretty respectful about sex, but I guess in my younger days, I used to be
precocious.
Capricious.
Oh, capricious.
Right.
Yeah. Which is like, that's me being, that's like, just like, that's an, you could say loose, and we'd all.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah.
But that's part of his whole thing, right?
It's like, fancy words.
He somehow was, I think he was in a very specific time where he became famous on Saturday Night Live, where we were okay with people sort of being smarter than us, and nobody allows that anymore.
Right.
Everybody wants comedians to be equal or dumber than us now.
Right.
But it used to be like, we'd respect someone who was in a slightly authoritative position. Mm-hmm. He wore a suit. He was the newsman, but he was sarcastic. He talked out of the side of his mouth, you know, and people liked, and sometimes he punched down, you know, like, and people at the time, I feel like, enjoyed picking on other people in a different way.
I have described 80s comedy as welcome to the 80s where racism is totally cool and queers are weird. And that was it.
Like, and it's how fast and quick can I be?
Right.
Yeah. You look at a lot of like Rich Scheidner is a perfect example of a guy who would go on Carson.
Right.
And just the only thing that was really funny was how quick and like boom, boom, boom. I haven't seen, apparently he's like, I've seen him a little bit more recently. He's actually kind of funny. I watched some of his YouTube. Mm-hmm. He's different now.
Right.
But what he was in the 80s, and it took him a while to fix that, was that it was just this quick like, boom, I got the punchline, boom. It's just like everything's rhythm. Mm-hmm. It's rhythm over jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny to think it's like a lot of people in the 70s broke that.
Yeah.
And then 80s almost went to a different rhythm.
Yeah.
And they stuck with that.
And
so
there's a lot
hard.
Of that in this. Like, there's a lot of times where it feels like we know so hard this is the end of this bit and it's the punchline. And people are laughing at not a great joke because they're just trained to.
Yeah. And there's the
applause. It's the Dennis Miller,
That's the cue.
That's the
subliminal cue.
That is.
Oh, wow. That's our laugh break.
Yeah. That is something that was very typical in the 80s, which was comics terrified that there be a silence.
Yes.
So they need to roll that in. Like, you know, if you ever hear like, I mean,
Conan still on his show every night, he'll make a joke and then say, which I thought was interesting.
Right.
And then move on. And that's just the filler in case they don't.
I mean,
it's very self-conscious.
Certainly with Dennis, it was like, It's like this over talking kind of thing, like, you know what I'm saying here, and it's like, it's like, it's just like they're almost laughing at that more than they're laughing at the joke, right? Which is like, it's very interesting, which is what, like, I mean, he's so heavily parodied in a sense because it's so calculated. I mean,
did you guys ever see one of my favorite bits with Miller and one of my favorite Dana Carvey bits was it was either the end of the season or the beginning of the season, and Dennis Miller had to do the news anchor oath. And so he said to swear me in is myself, Dennis Miller. And so it was Dana Carvey dressed just like him. And he said, I, Dennis Miller. And Dana says, I, Captain Hairdo.
Yeah.
And then he's going off on rants and doing all these great references and stuff.
You've seen
and
the
it was
one where
perfect.
Then Tom Hanks also does it too. Yes. And they sing Jingle Bells together. Oh, Jingle Bells. It's so great. It's like,
To be able to take that parody of you sitting right beside you is pretty cool.
It feels like he's sort of lost his sense of humor about himself over the years. Well, he used to be able to take it and roll with it, and it's just not there anymore.
He is friends. Like, he did tour with Carvey and I think John Lovitz for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen Lovitz's stand-up. I imagine it's not good, but
I got a lot of love for Lovitz. He's got his attitude and swagger kills me.
He's hilarious, and again, one of the best Saturday Night Live cast members of all time. I'll put him up in top 20 for sure, but
I believe he is still doing his episode of Larry Sanders right now.
Exactly.
blah, blah, blah.
But he, like, Carvey says his stand-up is just him being, like, not politically correct the whole time. And I just imagine it's him doing a bunch of bitterness, which is his shtick, is he's bitter about everybody else's success.
Right.
But how much of that, that's
together,
what I don't
So I guess
know.
They're still friends, and he still talks to, I mean, they're all pretty middle of the road. Neither of them, like, Carvey describes himself as a radical moderate or whatever. Like, he's just, like, very central. And Lovitz is a little, like, things he said about Obama were pretty terrible. Like, he's just right of center, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So none of them are, like, Republican.
They're all that soft, squishy, libertarian middle ground.
Right. A lot of the people were, like, Sandler was pretty, like, he's, like, a Republican spade, and those guys, like, there was a weird era of Saturday Night Live where they were kind of right wing.
What happens when you do SNL? Like, how do they turn this right wing factory on? Like, I don't, like, is it just all the sleep deprivation, all the drugs, and they just come out Republican? Is that what happens?
I think that's what happened in the 80s for sure. Now, I mean, you got
Lauren has a lot to answer for.
That period in there. Yeah. But like, now it's you look at what's coming out of there, and it's John Mulaney and stuff like that. So I mean, like, it's swung the other way now.
These shows are like very left preachy and like,
I'm
not saying it's negative or positive, it's just what it is, right?
Yeah.
The news is now like Michael Che and Colin Jost.
You watch Seth Meyers, or as I like to call it, the news.
I just
go through, like, I'll maybe watch an interview that he does if it's someone there, but I'm always there for like the closer look and the check-in.
That's
the only two things that I watch. Because it's just him doing a desk piece, so it just reminds me of, you know, Weekend Update.
And it's really great.
It is
stuff.
I think, I mean, this is my opinion, but I think politics, they say Donald Trump was great for comedy. I think it's terrible because I think Seth is really funny, but he's forced to kind of do the same stuff over and over.
I didn't like your show until Trump got
elected. I'm just tired of it. I'm tired of seeing Colbert talk about it over and over.
I don't watch Colbert. I liked him so much better as that character. Yeah.
Because I watched his show before and after the election.
Mm.
And before the election, he really hadn't found himself.
Right.
And then when the election results were coming in, and you see him kind of drunk in front of the cameras with a tumbler of whiskey in his hand I don't know what the hell is happening right now. The next shows just went through. Like, he found himself. Yeah. It was like when Leno had Hugh Grant on.
Yeah.
Right. And that became the pivot point. Yeah. Like, he found his moment where it's just like, okay, now I know what I need to do. And he's done.
And it's truthful, right? It's you're not trying to pretend to be. I still don't like his. I don't like Colbert's interview style. I feel like he's Fallon-esque. We have a lot of talk show hosts now that are just such fans of the people that the interviews are so slow pitch. I really miss Letterman in the role he was in as a talk show host. I'm not really a fan of his. My next guest needs no introduction because even he's falling into that a little bit. Like, I like, my favorite thing with Letterman.
Beer pong with the Pope? Is that what he does? Yeah,
exactly. Well, he's
when
very
he used to interview
different.
People that we didn't know who they were, that was awesome.
Harvey
Peake. Well, that's like, Fallon's first show. I like Jimmy Fallon when he did Late Night. When he did Late Night, he had like Charles Grodin on and like a bunch of people he's genuinely fans of. And I love Jimmy when he's genuinely fans of someone, a fan of someone.
Yeah.
Now it's like NBC's puppet, right?
But Letterman would also, like, he had years running bit with the guy from the Hello Deli down the street.
Yeah,
and
he
would bring in, like, the staff. Like, the cue card guy became a celebrity. And, and he would, and the stupid pet tricks. Like, it was people who weren't already celebrities and found the interesting weirdness about them. That's what I want. I don't want to see another recycled People Magazine review.
Leno kind of changed that culture a lot.
Yeah, he did.
Carson used to have weirdos on, too.
Oh, yeah. But and that was when it was a 90-minute show.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, okay, here comes a bird expert for 20 minutes to steer it back to Dennis Miller.
I'm glad someone is
one of the don't mean to take over.
You've been doing it 40 years.
When he was, yes, exactly. I was just, you know, back when podcasting was just opening your window and screaming out what you liked. My next guest is my neighbor. I remember seeing Dennis Miller on the old late night with David Letterman. And it was fun watching him. He came on, he didn't do stand up, he did panel. And you could tell it was panel. Like at the point that I was getting into comedy and stuff like that, I at the age of like 16, 17, I figured out like, oh, they're just doing stand up. But they're doing
sitting in a chair.
And it's like they're talking.
Yeah.
Icy.
Yeah.
And so he was doing panel and he broke the illusion because he was he was doing this stuff and he was bringing in like this From Russia with Love reference to a flight he had taken. Right. He's like, the stewardess was having a bad time. She was about as courteous as that broad with the knife in a shoe from From Russia with Love. It's like, more coffee, Mr. Bond? And then he just, after he gets through this like 3 minutes of doing airplane jokes, he just turns to Dave and goes, you know how nice it is to have a new airplane chunk? And they both start laughing because that's an inside joke to him.
Right.
But in that same episode, and it was also in part of that airplane chunk, I saw to Dennis Miller's credit, he's going through his joke. You can tell he's just like, he's doing his act.
Right.
But he's doing it to David's face, like just across from him. And he's talking about the woman in the security. It's like, I'm watching the woman who's watching the security camera. The luggage goes through. She's got the attention span of Boo Radley. And and I see, and David, they cut back, and Letterman just goes, hands up, goes, no idea who that is. And Dennis Miller just turns to him, really? The shut-in from To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah, yeah.
And he goes on with the joke, and he's three words in, and Dave goes, oh, yeah! Like, you can hear him like that. And it's like, it's just
wow.
It's him, like, it. That was a charming moment for me.
Sure.
Because that's when I went, it's okay that we don't get this, because that's a friend of his.
Right.
And he doesn't get it.
Well, and maybe he did, but he saved it knowing his audience did.
Right.
And that's, Letterman was great at that. He wanted to keep it low brow.
He's such an interesting character, because I recently read a book on him, and he's changed so much. Like
Letterman?
The book I read.
Dennis Miller as well.
The book I read about Letterman made me feel I liked him and hated him more at the same time, because he was kind of a jerk to a lot of his staffers and guests he didn't like. Whereas now he's trying this huge effort to be a lot nicer to people and stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas Dennis
Miller is not trying to be nice to anybody.
No.
It's
interesting that you say that, because like in interviews since with either of those guys, Letterman has become very apologetic, and he wants to grow into it. He goes, I have made mistakes. I need to make resolutions around those mistakes. I am sorry for what I've done. I did this. And like he was just like very, very.
And I buy it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Of course you do. and I don't mean that in the kind of sense. It's like, I mean, as a whole. It's like, of course you do, because that's the only choice we have, right? Like, we have to take him at his word and just, this is what we want. But with Dennis Miller after 9/11 and just for him going, pulling that ship harder and harder to the
Yeah.
to, I think, where he's painted himself kind of the same way that, and I hate to bring these two into the same camp, but Chuck Woolery has done the exact same thing.
Right.
Where there's no turning back.
Yeah.
There's like, he has now made his, this is my fan base now.
Yeah.
And like I refer in the same way, like whenever I bring up Jay Leno, when I talk about his old career, and when I talk about Dennis Miller, I always say Dennis Miller back when he was a comedian.
Right.
Would do that.
Who
like
is, Chuck
Woolery? Well, cha-cha. He was a talk show host.
Oh, okay.
Well, game show host, really. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he never had a talk show. It was game shows that he...
Sort of disappeared for a while, but then came, I guess, to Twitter prevalence, or I don't know what it was that brought him back.
Hey, Chuck Woolery's on! This will be fun! Oh, good God!
Yeah.
It's like 90s or something? 2000?
Probably the late 90s. I don't know. He's a guy who's been around a while. He probably hosted a bunch of different shows.
Probably recognizing.
Probably something with big cards.
Yeah.
Probably Card Sharks or something.
Exactly.
Yeah. Just, listening to this album, it really amazes me at like how much of Bill Maher has ripped off Dennis Miller as a whole. Oof. Like his entire shtick from Cradle to Grave seems to be, I'm going to be Dennis Miller, but slightly left. Kind of racist.
Well, I think he's also a lot less funny.
Well, that's he's ripped it off. It's not genuine. Right.
Yeah.
He just wants to talk about
his opinions and try to slip jokes in. He's not a joke smith.
But they would have been contemporaries at one point because Bill Maher was also doing, like, I remember seeing Evenings at the Improv around the same time that, Dennis Miller would have been doing stand up and they would have both been touring. So there's no way
they probably both have one night stands.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You're right. Like it's very interesting to see, but like, if you look at Bill Maher's comedy back then, there were actual jokes.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He got the late show stuff, like back in the brick wall era,
right,
in the 80s and early 90s, like I kind of found him funny because he wasn't doing all the stuff that I later came to find, I'm gonna just turn you off and never turn you back on again.
And I don't always disagree with Bill Maher. I mean, I often do, but when I do, I still don't like him. Like,
it's so weird. He's just such a jerk how he makes his points. He's really disliked by a lot of comedians. Like, a lot of people say the same thing. Like, they'll watch the show because of the format. And, like, I agree. Like, sometimes some of those overtimes are really fun to watch just because he gets all these different opinions. But in terms of, like, his new rules and stuff, like, it's so bad. Like, it's just like, and a lot of comics don't like him. Like, he's a butt of a lot of jokes. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that must be such a weird feeling. Not to be respected by your community. Yeah.
Some of the things that I will watch, because I'll find the odd clip on YouTube that kind of floats into the feed and go, okay, let's see what this is about. And he can be right about a few things, and I will find some of them entertaining. But you're right, like the bulk of it, like, maybe I'll see what this monologue is like. And it's interesting, like, they both kind of changed. Both Dennis Miller and Bill Maher changed. And it's interesting that we've turned against Bill Maher, whereas for the most part, I don't know where you guys stand on it. When I see what's happening with Dennis Miller, my initial reaction is, oh, Dennis.
Yeah.
Like, why? How did you let this
there's
happen?
There's a sadness to like there how is. I feel about it. It's like I kind of look at it as like the cultural inflection point of 9/11 broke a lot of people. And I think he's one of them.
But see, I still don't know how much of it is really him, because he was on Kimmel late last year, and he seemed really down to earth and kind.
Yeah, that was a great interview.
It was a great interview, and they talked about his politics and how he says he doesn't consider himself political. I think he is that sort of fearful right side of center guy, but I don't think he's as hateful as he comes across in his comments.
I think it's to incite people,
and we all used to laugh at it in a different way, now half of us do, and half of us cringe.
Well, I think it's like my issues with Jerry Seinfeld's new material. Jerry Seinfeld's new material isn't bad because of how it's bad because it's an 80s joke told in the 2000s
and 2010s. We talked about this on the last podcast.
Does he say the N-word?
No, but he uses Seinfeld? Like, is the gay stuff. He leans into that a lot, and it's like, it's not funny.
Well, it shows your age. You got to change with the times.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I think my mom actually mentioned this to me a long time ago, which is an interesting theory, which is it wasn't necessarily that Dennis Miller was scared by 9/11. He recognized that people were scared, like George Bush recognized that people were living in fear. and decided, oh, this is a market, right?
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of right-wing comedians out there, and you can probably name them on one hand. You know, it's like Tim Allen and Larry the Cable Guy and Jeff Foxworthy. So it's like, oh, this is a market that a lot of people also feel this way about, you know, the Middle East or whatever, and I can just start making jokes about it, and a lot of people will pay me for it.
Not just that, like, where left and right are now has shifted.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was the same as it is right now, you could argue that we were all way more right-wing in 1988.
Sure, and he just
heard all the kids were using gay slurs as an insult. Mm-hmm. They weren't even really knowing what they were saying, and they would say racist things as well. Like, we just, we weren't as, I mean, we got a long way to go, and I think we've slipped in the last week. But anyway, we've, there's been some progress in the last 30 years, and it's weird when a comedian who got famous at that time doing something, their audience demands they keep doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, it's like they're in a bubble and can't really evolve with the rest of us, if that makes sense.
But you have to, like, and you have to grow at that time. Like,
and people do. I mean, don't get me wrong. A lot of
And I think
do.
To a sense, Seinfeld has. I mean, this was our last. I think he has jokes that has.
I think Dennis Miller hasn't. I think he's locked into that structure that he's established.
Well, he doubled down the other way because there's still half the population is on that side of things. And they'll come to his show.
But you've got, but again, you need that awareness. You need to be in the room, and by the room I need the world. I mean the world. Like, I have been podcasting for 12 years. In that time, there are recordings and things on those recordings that even that today, and we're not even talking a long period of time, like you know, Friends era, which is also has not aged well.
That is a problematic show.
Some of the stuff on my old podcast episodes are just, you would go, no, that's not cool. And, you know, do I do that now in the new episodes? Of course I do.
Right.
Because, you know, making fun of gay people is fun.
Yeah.
You are. No, but like you grow and you learn, because if you don't service your audience.
Well, and these days it seems like so many people, possibly because of the social platforms we have and finding other people like you, people are so committed to their opinions and not committed to an open mind and changing that mind. And that's a terrifying thing to me. And it's sad. And you also, through your podcast, are exposing yourself. With that. Yeah, there you go.
Open robes every time you record.
But you're meeting people who have to keep it fresh all the time, who aren't celebrities. They're chasing new audiences, and you're meeting young comedians, and you're hearing their perspectives. Yeah. And I think, and you have an open mind, so like you're constantly feeding yourself with new perspectives, I guess, which is great. And so we should all host a comedy podcast, is what I'm saying.
I'll give Todd a lot of credit because. I've seen Todd a handful of times, and like, absolutely, when you see someone, you're like, because Todd's an older guy, I'm like, oh, I'm surprised at how hip he is and smart he is, and he keeps
he's not old, or you're young.
But
let me tell you, there isn't a lot of room on that stage with me and those WKRP references that I start throwing out there. When I start talking about Sam and Diane's dalliances.
Exactly. But there's guys that are younger than Todd who I feel like are older than Todd in the terms of the fact that it's like
they're out of touch.
I will never say names, but it's like you see people only like maybe 30, 40, and it's like, gosh, like what? Like, how have you not evolved? You're starting comedy now.
Right.
And it's like, it's just things that you're tone deaf about. It's not even like an opinion.
Well,
is
isn't it? Don't you find it interesting? Like, some of the people, there's so many different kinds of people who get into comedy, and some people who get into comedy. I mean, a lot of people are introverts, but I've met people who got into comedy who are very lone wolf type people, but they've watched a bunch of stuff from the 80s and then just try it, but they haven't lived.
Right.
They're like writing jokes that are derivative of 30-year-old jokes as opposed to their own experiences. Yeah. And it's sad to watch because they want it to work, but they just don't understand how to do it.
Nothing drives me more nuts than when someone is up on stage giving me the performance of what they think the performance of a comedian is.
Yeah.
As opposed to just being themselves telling jokes. They put on this facade. You can just hear it in the tone of voice.
Totally.
You can hear it in the delivery. You can see how mechanical it is. Mm-hmm. And it's just not like this. The Off-White album, if you put it in a time capsule, that sums up 88.
Yeah,
there was absolutely. Every single thing about that made it 88. The Reagan era economics, the sort of arrogance that was built in around Reagan era economics, mm-hmm. of like, because you can hear the disdain in his voice.
Mm-hmm.
Not disdain, but like, you know, in the jokes of like, you know, if you're wearing a name tag, like he yeah. really kind of hits
There's
the blue collar.
Yeah,
he really hits yeah. the flyover states and the red states. All the stuff about AIDS. All the stuff about yep. the Middle East, all the stuff about, like, the Russian stuff is still relevant,
yep.
you know.
Yeah,
but that summed up like everything that was happening at that
yeah.
time.
Yeah, and hearing you say that, it makes me realize, talking about the shift of left and right. You know, we say, "Oh, we saw that he was on the right back then,"
right?
But then he was probably just left
yeah.
of center,
yeah.
sure,
right? That stuff was stuff we were all. Thinking about, like, I imagine his biggest audience was in that year.
Yeah.
Like, we weren't as divided as we are now.
And that know? Was, like, coming right off of SNL. So he's at
oh,
the
yeah.
top
he's
of
a rock
his,
star.
Top of his,
of course.
Like, mm-hmm. recognition
and
everything.
And, I mean, we talked a bit about how Saturday Night Live is a bit of a right-wing factory. I mean, I wouldn't quite say that. I think the show is definitely seen...
Mm-hmm.
And always has been as a leftist
yeah.
show,
right?
Yeah.
A liberal-minded show.
Well, yeah. When he was on there,
show.
he was doing left-wing material.
Right.
But as soon as he like that entire chunk of the cast during that era, all left and were all right, center right.
Yeah.
Kind uh-huh. of. So it was a weird confluence. But I think it's
yeah.
the Reagan era.
Writer was a right-wing guy. Jim Downey,
yeah.
Yeah.
is a Republican.
But, yeah. but you still hear people say, "What happened to Dennis Miller?" Mm. And but the people who watched him on the show went and liked him, this left-wing show, mm. would go to his stand-up and see more right stuff and still love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they loved his style. They loved his attitude. Well, they loved, you know, they're star fuckers too. Everybody loves just right. seeing a celebrity. But yeah, it wasn't, left and right weren't as far apart as they are
no,
now,
no,
I don't think.
No,
no, it was
before the Tea Party.
Right? It was a very thin yeah. band. That you know you were either pro Reagan or not sort of pro Reagan.
Yeah,
like that was it. Like you heard like the statistics that he mentions there. When he went to bed, Mondale had 3. Like that was
right.
the electoral.
Yeah.
This is
yeah.
who we want for president. So everyone was like, we need like mm-hmm. we need change. We had just gone out of Jimmy Carter's presidency. We need a change, mm-hmm. and he provided.
There were also
and this dream. He put this dream in front of people. Like whenever you watch specials about the 80s, that's always what they talk yeah. about. It's like the Reagan
right.
era was like, hey, you know what? It's literally like how Homer Simpson got to be the garbage commissioner for Springfield. Just like, let someone else do it.
Yeah.
Yay! And like literally that's how he
A lot of people
it.
Look back yeah. though and go, we could have used another Jimmy Carter type.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's right.
Looking back,
yeah.
it's like
he's
oh,
still
yeah.
around building houses.
Yeah.
You know, so
he was too smart
yeah.
for a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think that was his issue. He couldn't dumb himself down.
The interesting thing about the Reagans too is they really were the first presidential couple to weaponize pop culture. Like
mm-hmm.
he had Nancy
just
Reagan,
say no.
yeah, just so you know, Nancy Reagan showing up on Punky Brewster,
mm-hmm.
I think it was. So you had like video games with
Were
the
they
faces
both
on
actors,
it.
Nancy and
yeah,
Nancy was too.
Nancy was.
She, yeah, not as big name
no.
as Ronnie, uh-huh. but like then they got married. She sort of retired to raise
right.
the kids.
Yeah, yeah.
but. Yeah, like they were both on TV and places that you traditionally never saw a
and young
presidency,
too,
mm-hmm.
right? Like
yeah.
since like JFK, youngest since like JFK,
right?
Yeah,
right.
but
like
still like you know after 50s, the Obamas,
right?
right. Well, and back then too, so, like we could agree that we would have some values that were shared,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there would be a lot of overlap, and there would
right.
be maybe a couple of little things where you'd be like, ah, I like a stance on this, but not on this. Mm-hmm. But these days, it's we can have nothing in common,
right.
and we have to find the most controversial issue that will mobilize people,
right.
and so we're being manipulated, and it can't be genuine because there's no way half of us have a completely opposite
well,
set
no,
of values
I mean,
than the other half.
It's the thing of
crazy.
Like once we throw labels in. I mean,
yeah.
Obama used to say this a lot too. It's like when people take the labels away and you just go sit beside someone who's just the regular folk, and you start talking to them, and a lot of people have the same values, right? Like, it when you take away the labels, it's mm-hmm. just we're all human beings who want people to succeed, and they want, you know, everyone to have an opportunity at life. And
that's a lovely thought, but I don't agree with it anymore.
Listen, I just made a cum libtard.
Exactly. Jesus. Exactly.
Jesus.
Get me out of here.
Clear the goddamn room.
It's like we put labels, and it's unfortunate. Mm-hmm. And then people who don't have access to education hear one thing, and they nod their head, and they say, "I need money, so mm-hmm. I'll yeah. vote for you." And we live in a social media era where people hear what they want to hear, and they yep. don't get all the information that they mm-hmm. should get, and it's frustrating. And mm-hmm.
And there's no accountability anymore. That's what really bothers me the most. There's no yeah. apologies. There's no, oh, maybe I was wrong about that, or maybe my party leader was wrong yeah. about that. Mm-hmm. Like, that kind of tribalism scares the
hell
out of me.
Well, I mean, right. like, again, this is throwing shade at the other side, but there's currently someone in power who would never apologize for anything.
Yeah.
Right. Admit to anything
there's
in terms
of
wrong.
That would never apologize.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
But one on this side of the border, the other on the other side.
But what's also interesting is if, and I don't want to get too much into left versus right and how who's bad and who's good or whatever, but, you know, Trudeau will apologize if he makes a mistake, or he has. And, yeah. and sure, there's things he needs to apologize right. for and hasn't. Please don't send letters. But
we're not a
pro
Trudeau show. Right.
We're
just
funny
phoning
to
him
me
out.
Is that some people who are his opponents say they're a Scheer fan.
Trudeau says sorry more than the guy stuck in the shelves at Milton Bradley.
Right. So yeah. Scheer doesn't apologize because he hasn't said anything wrong and he shouldn't apologize, but of course he would right. if he did. Trudeau says I'm sorry. What a wuss.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
a weakling. Yeah. Just apologize yeah. and what a crybaby. Like yeah. when is being accountable?
Right.
Yeah, to being yeah, absolutely.
A baby. I mean, that
again, this is
the
social media right. thing. It's like, yeah. once you start hating on mm-hmm. Trudeau, everything you see on your social media feed yeah. is
yes.
the negative
exactly.
things he does. And not to say he doesn't do negative things, mm-hmm.
of course.
But all you see is that. And if you are hating on Doug Ford, all yeah. you see is the
yes.
hate on Doug
it
Ford.
Is, it is the exact equivalent yeah. of I buy a bird bath on Amazon. And then suddenly my feed for the next 3 weeks is, yeah. do you need a bird bath? Not anymore.
I
dickhead.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Don't you
exactly.
hate squirrels?
Yeah.
Squirrel killer.
Yeah. There was something like interesting, birds. And I heard it again tonight, and I forgot about this. There's actually a joke on this special that shows up on another guy's album.
Ooh.
It's the exact same joke.
Juicy,
really?
Juicy.
Yes.
What's the other comedian?
I'll tell you the joke, and we'll see if anyone else has found this in this room,
okay.
since this is a comedy album podcast.
Sure, yeah.
Is the joke about Reagan's age, and he says, my grandfather's younger than him, and we won't let him have the control for the
right.
TV.
That sounded like a very 80s joke.
It is a very 80s joke.
And an easy one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know who did it first, but I can tell you it showed up on this album first.
Okay.
And then... Now, again, I haven't checked the year on this, but Billy Connolly's Live at Albert Hall
oh.
has that exact same word-for-word joke, except he uses telly. Scott.
Sure.
And, and so that's the...
It's both Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if either of those men ripped off the other one.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound
like,
no.
That's general enough. It could just be sort of like concurrent
it's
right. ideation
guys
kind
right.
of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be weirder if Billy Connolly was doing something like, and then the Gabor sisters.
Right. Yeah. Cha cha.
Right. We'd be like, right. well, I don't know there, Billy. Like, see
the what's with the kabuki shit twilight?
That's great.
Exactly. Well, this feels like a good time to take a little bit of a break. We'll go maybe refresh ourselves and think of some more things we want to talk about. We'll be right back to finish things off.
Yes, it is. That's right.
It's literally, there's no joke. There's no joke in it.
Wait, so we just had to do a mic adjust. Did you just come in on that last
yeah,
word?
Yeah, blah, 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 F word.
Yeah.
And the whole joke is, you know when you're riding with your buddies? And you just see one walking down the street and you just yell out the window at them.
Yeah.
And the audience goes nuts. That's all it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no joke. No. It's not even like sometimes no. in Delirious, he just mm-hmm. uses it as a word.
Yes.
And
yeah.
it's still not okay.
No.
But the joke's not about them being gay. It's just he uses that word.
Right.
But this.
Yeah, Roz.
One, and Calum and I were just sitting there going, oh my God, because Calum's got all these random albums. We're just listening to my friend Calum O'Neill.
Right.
And we were just in shock. And it was like, there's no bit. And the audience is loving it. They're
yes.
cheering, they're hooting and hollering. This is blatant, just homophobia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's disgusting.
Yeah, it's weird. And it makes me wonder, like, since he has done nothing stand-up wise since.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where's his head at now? Like, can he even do it? I mean, he got a long way just on his charm, right? I mean, he's just an amazing energy to watch.
I can't wait to watch it. The new Comedians in Cars comes out today. And he talks a lot about going back in a stand-up on the thing. Because I saw the snippet, and he's like, I've been really wanting to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Don Rickles kept telling me to do it and stuff. And
wow.
I
love that you're on the fence until Don pats you on the shoulder and goes, you got to carry the torch, kid. Yeah,
exactly. All right. So let's wrap things up on Dennis Miller here. So how do we usually close this show, Matt? It's been a while.
Oh, we'll go around, see, you know, if you think it's an important album and if you'd recommend watching it and any closing thoughts. Then we go around closing thoughts on it.
There you go. All right. Let's start with you, Todd.
I feel it's an important album. This is one that I had a collection of albums that if I was on a long drive, I would put them in the tape deck. If I wanted to go to sleep, I would put them on so that I knew how long it took me to fall asleep. And I heard this. Oh, the last bit I heard was, you know, Twyla. Okay, good night. So that's how long it took me to sleep. I remember listening to this album the first time. And as soon as it was done, I went, damn, I need a thesaurus.
And did you listen to it in 88?
Yeah, I did.
You did?
Yeah, I did. I listened to it in 88. I had just started university then, and it filled a lot of kilometers on the highway between Gananoque and Waterloo.
How many times have you heard it, you
think? Oh, I can't imagine how many times.
Yeah.
There was in this collection of albums, there was this one. There was Playing With Your Head by George Carlin.
Nice.
There was Women of the Night, which was Kathy Smith, Kathy Ladman.
Oh, wow.
And who was the other one? Margaret Smith was on that one. It just kind of fit in there. Like, it was so different than anything that was out there. It was of the time.
And you still laugh at it.
I still do.
Yeah.
I still do. That's mostly cool. The racist parts, because now I agree with
you. Yeah, that's you.
But it just took me right back to that childhood. Like I said before, this is the time capsule for 80s.
And that's an interesting thing too, right? Like, someone coming in cold to this album would have a much different feeling, I imagine. So you, Chili, when did you first hear this album? Was
last
it today?
Week.
Last week.
I listened to it in preparation.
And was there, I imagine your eyebrows were raised for a lot of the...
A lot of it. I mean, the thing is, as I say, I know pretty much the post 9/11 Dennis Miller.
Right.
So I know this guy, and it's my favorite thing to do, because I make older, whenever I see an older comedian or something, I say, which Dennis Miller are we talking about? And they're all obviously impressed by my knowledge.
It's like when you're talking about Def Leppard with friends, one arm or two.
Yeah, yeah. It's certainly important. It's an important album because, as Todd said, it's literally 1988, and
it's not the only comedy album from that era. But...
No,
but it might as well be called 1988.
Yes.
Take that, Van Halen, 4 years later.
Exactly. And it's certainly quintessential Dennis Miller. And as I say, there's a few genuinely great bits in there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a few that you don't need to know the references. You don't need to know anything. It's a lot of it's difficult for me to get on board on. And as I say, I'm pretty old. I have a pretty old soul. I watch a lot of older stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's still tough. And it still goes over my head. And it's like, obviously, like, if you don't live, like, I love old SNL, but it's hard for me to watch Update up until about Norm MacDonald, because it's like, I mean, Chevy Chase was my hero growing up, but I can't watch a lot of Update because it just doesn't play for me.
Yeah.
And I mean, a lot of his was also just visual jokes. He would just make fun of what was in the picture. So, but it's a weird thing. And everyone from Dennis Miller's cast or something, like, I think that's the best. I don't think there's such thing as a golden era on SNL, but if you want to come close, it's Carvey, Hartman,
Yeah.
Like Dennis Miller,
Victoria Jackson.
Victoria Jackson, yeah. Jan Hooks, who was one of the best.
Jan
ever.
Hooks was absolutely incredible.
And then Mike Myers found his way in there and stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed some of it, but it doesn't quite hold up. And I think if you played it for a lot of young comedians today who don't have what I have, which is, I think, an appreciation for that era. And not to say that's a bad thing or anything. It's just who I grew up on because of my parents. But it's important. It has funny jokes, but it doesn't quite hold up to today's standards.
Interesting. Yeah, what I find interesting about it is I don't feel, I mean, none of it's really directed at me, but I don't find it as offensive as some of the stuff that Murphy did.
No,
because I feel like there's something about this persona that Miller uses that lets him get away with a lot of stuff. And it's just kind of this angry, ranty guy. And it's kind of the excuse of, you know, Archie Bunker, like, I hate everybody equally type of thing. You know what I mean? It's sort of that thing. Like, this guy's just angry at this moment in time, the specific thing. Some of the stuff we wince at. But then he moves on to something that makes us chuckle. It's not like it's 90 minutes about I hate people with turbans and stuff.
Yeah, stuff
he does.
Like
yeah. So it seems a little equal, even though you can kind of hear the, you shouldn't have said
but
that.
But to
type
me,
of stuff.
The holding up is not the offensive part. It's the reference part.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, references will work forever.
Yeah.
By definition. I mean, if you know what he's talking about, you'll always know.
Yeah. The
I guess.
The problem does need a glossary.
Yeah. The problem is like so many of his references are so hyper specific and culturally specific to 1960s television.
Yeah.
Like F Troop.
It
had to be exactly his age.
Yeah.
To know that stuff.
Right? Yeah.
But that's really smart of him too, because I don't know who the ultimate Dennis Miller fan is, but I think the people who go to his shows, they get most of his stuff and they're on board with him. And that's a smart comedian. Yeah. I mean, you can't be someone for everyone. I think he's probably his audience has diminished as time goes by, but they've probably got more they've gotten more passionate about being a fan of his, you know, he speaks to them specifically as opposed to Seinfeld, who's sort of all over the map, you know.
He's ranty, but he's not like Lewis Black now ranty.
Yeah.
Yes.
Where it's just like, take that paper clips. Like it's just,
He's got, he's got this sort of effortless, I'm sure he puts a lot of effort into it, to being that cool, to being, to shrugging it off.
Yeah.
Like it's such a casual hate that
it's
non-threatening.
There's that part in the special where he almost does the like voice, the impression of Clark Gable. And then he goes, nah, I'm going to circle back to being
Cary
cool.
Grant.
Sorry. Yeah.
Back
Cary
to
Grant.
Coolsville.
And it's like, he's both a little bit making fun of himself, but also that's genuinely who he is. And he would do a bit with voices and characters.
That joke was my introduction to sort of like the meta comedy, which was comedy making fun of itself.
Right.
And so
without
him
getting too high and inside.
With him to do that, you're like, you're three quarters way through. Is he going to do this?
That, I think, was my favorite joke in the entire album, because he's making fun of the comedy of the day.
Uh-huh.
He's making fun of his persona and the entire artifice about both of them.
Right.
So
exactly.
And like, he's taking the entire structure down.
Yeah.
I guess. I feel like we're giving him a little bit too much credit.
Would you want more airplane chunks?
I mean, maybe not a lot of people did it, but pretending to do a bad bit and then say, I'm not going to do it, I don't think is the smartest thing Dennis Miller's ever done.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, around that time, and if you go onto Amazon Prime right now and look at the old Evening of the Improvs that are out there.
Right, with the brick wall.
I have said this before, some of those bottles of wine have turned to vinegar. It is not good.
Yeah.
And a lot of it would be comedy like that. Like, what if Ronald Reagan was actually Donald Duck Reagan? And then it would just, whatever it was.
And
like, it was just horrible comedy.
That was my, like, bread and butter in high school.
Of course it was.
Is watching that stuff.
Yeah.
And that's... Yeah, and I think, like, for me, it's that time capsule element of that album.
Okay, so fair. So in 88, maybe that was, oh, man, finally someone who's not doing everything everyone's doing.
Right,
yeah.
Because now it's so passé to even make the joke about that.
Right.
That itself is becoming cliche.
Yeah.
It now you need to commit to do the thing
you have
to
actually
do
it.
That's
now,
right.
Yeah. Wow.
We've come around so full circle that we hate what we're doing.
Yeah. Who would you say is, I mean, he's still around kind of doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. Is there an equivalent to Dennis Miller these days who maybe isn't as inflammatory
Patton, Oswalt,
that's a really interesting. Yeah. I never
Patton really... is sort of the same thing. He will talk politically. He has an awful lot. And he's another one of my favorites. And for the exact same reason, when I sit there, I go, fuck, I need a thesaurus, because he's also a very smart writer, very conscious of his word.
Mm-hmm.
He will, in the same vein, throw out references that, hey, if you get them, cool. If not, you'll figure it out in a couple of years when you finally watch, you know, Deadwood or something.
Right.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
So it's like, I find that he has a really, really smart word choice in the same way Dennis Miller does.
I respect any comedian who is willing to be niche. Mm-hmm. It's gutsy to say, I'm only for certain people. I'm not for everybody. Because I think a lot of comedians go out there trying to be, you know, in every comedian, try to appeal to everybody. What's funny to everybody? And it's just not possible.
Yeah.
No.
Who would be the closest?
Said the Bill Maher.
But who would be the closest to someone who's appealed to everybody?
Who appeals to everyone?
I mean, Seinfeld is a rock star for sure.
I mean, a lot of the late night guys, obviously, like Jimmy Fallon and Seth Meyers and stuff like
that. Let's go with the guy that threw him off of Star Search, Sinbad.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, he had a moment.
He's the Sinbad of our generation.
Those are your kind of biggest ones. Any late night person right now is pretty much, you know, with all due respect to all of them, they're pretty pandery, you know, and they try to please everyone and they try to be like, they don't try to step on too many toes, right?
Right.
Samantha Bee kind of breaks that.
Yeah, sure, but I don't think, even though it is a late night show, it's very different. It's more of a, it's like a Daily Show type thing, which I never really consider the Daily Show as a regular late night.
John Oliver in the same vein.
Yeah.
I would say
could be like, I could see that as a Dennis Miller type for sure.
Right.
To add a Canadian thread to it, I kind of see Rick Mercer in the same vein with the rant kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's the Ron James too, right?
He's so good at what he does. I mean, he's not for everybody, and he's probably for an older audience because of what he talks about.
That's why he's so much Dennis Miller.
I cannot believe what he can memorize and rhyme off with the rhythm he does. Like,
he came on the podcast
incredible.
And we just slip into a bit.
Sure.
I go, you have this reference. He goes, and then he rattles through 2 minutes of it.
He's a poetry. On, Chris Locke's podcast, and he just like goes and goes and goes and goes, and he's just brilliant, right?
Yeah.
He's just so smart. It's like, find him funny or not, he's brilliant. I mean, that's just like Dennis Miller. Find him funny or not, brilliant guy.
But I got to do some voices on Ron James's show a couple years ago, some of the animated stuff, and man, he is a driven, hardworking dude, too. I mean, that's apparent from his stand-up, but he has a vision, and he works hard, and it was really cool to see his commitment to that kind of stuff.
What were you going to say about Rick Mercer?
Just, like, he's got that sort of hyperkinetic pace to his ranting, where it just, again, go, 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 go.
Yeah.
And he doesn't give you a chance to breathe with his when he does that. But that's like one specific
bit
that he does.
A little old Rick Mercer, too. Rick Mercer's become more pandery and... Like, his show in the later years was Let's Please Everyone, whereas his stuff, like, on whatever, 22 minutes, right? And then it's like...
Well, when you're on a public broadcaster, I guess you have to...
Right.
Canadian satire, as they say, is pretty toothless, because the things you can and can't say in Canada...
But that's supposed to be changing, and they're starting to push the limits of those laws.
Wouldn't
they've changed. I'm hoping the Beaverton goes a little sharper this year.
Third season.
Third season.
Going to see them tape on Monday. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah.
Right on. All right, folks. Well, thanks for listening to this album with us and for listening to the show. Todd Van Allen, host, of course, of Comedy Above the Pub.
You got it.
Which I've been on twice, I believe.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. So it's a good time. Have you had Patton Oswalt on the show?
No.
Oh, we have. No. Well, anyway.
Oh, is that right? Son of a bitch.
We did. We got an interview with him when he was publishing his book last year.
Beautiful.
That was pretty cool. Yeah. You can find it on the thing.
His podcast interview. He's such a smart guy.
He's a great dude. Really nice dude. And Chili, we can see your show every month at SoCap.
First Tuesday of the month, 9:30 p.m.
Beautiful.
Comedy
Pay What You Can't.
Comedy Bar.
Pay What You Can't at
Comedy Bar. Sorry. Yeah, yeah. And it's what do you have, four or five comics?
Yeah, we have about four or five stand-ups, usually a sketch or improv, and then a professional headliner.
Cool. Do you MC it or open it?
Oftentimes, sometimes they do sketch on it, but oftentimes me or my producing partner Robbie Woods will host it, and we're doing a best of show on August 6th. I don't know when this comes out.
Sounds good.
And it'll be some of my favorite people coming back. So
right on. Excellent. Do we know what our next album is going to be?
Not yet.
All right, then. We'll
if I could throw one more thing out there, third Saturday of the month, also at Comedy Bar, is my write 'em up show.
Of course, yeah.
This May, the next one at the time of recording is tomorrow. Don't know how fast this is coming out.
Nope.
It's the third Saturday of every month, so August 17th is the next one. Five comics come on stage. I host it. They do time. They leave. While they're on stage, I have a team of writers writing roast jokes about everything the comic does. I dismiss the comic. And I retrieve those cards, and I read them verbatim, providing anonymity and emotional distance for the writers.
It's very fun.
It's the funnest show in TO, so please call me.
And, of course, you can find Matt and me here at Comedy Album Book Club.
Yeah.
We're on Twitter at ACABC Podcast.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
No, at CABC. Podcast. Yeah.
Listen to the Seinfeld episode. It's a good one. We get very off track.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Thanks again for listening to Comedy Album Book Club.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.